One of the most desired characteristics in today's leasing world is flexibility. I'm Jan Gibbons.
And I'm Bob Gibbons.
And this week on the Confessions of a Recovering Landlord podcast, we'll discuss why flexibility is so important and why landlords charge extra for it. Some companies are growing rapidly while others are shrinking. I guess this is what makes flexibility in their leases so appealing.
You know, definitely. Companies have plans and may be waiting for that one big contract to be signed when, poof, it all vanishes overnight. In other cases, the new contract that takes them by surprise and they have a hard time managing the growth. So flexibility in some cases is the difference between staying in business and failure. Because companies can fail through aggressive growth just as much as from not enough. So much of the flexibility needed right now, though, doesn't have anything to do with whether the underlying business is going well or not. It's a function of working from home and other places, allowing people to live where they like, hybrid working arrangements, and employee reluctance to return to the office.
Okay, so let's talk about some ways tenants can achieve the ever elusive flexibility. Number one, lease more space than is needed initially and sublet it out until the company needs the space.
You better be dang sure about that growth if you're going to do this.
Yeah, I know you hate this one.
If a client wants more space than less space, that's good for us, right? Because we make our money based on commissions.
But we also make our money by turning a customer into a client.
Long
over
term.
The term of the life of their company.
Yeah.
And you always do that by putting their best interest forward.
Absolutely. We're a fiduciary to the client, so we're doing what's in their best interest. So I always advise against this one, unless they're absolutely sure, or unless they have a related company who is willing to sign on the dotted line and commit to a long-term sublease, the same term as the primary lease, or at least until they think they're going to need that space. But otherwise, never take on more overhead than you have to have.
Second one is lease what you need now and have a right to expand to a future date.
So I do like this one because now you're taking the appropriate amount of overhead space. It's usually the second highest expense for most companies behind all the payroll and benefits stuff. So take what you need right now and then hopefully expand in the future. I say hopefully because there's a variety of ways to expand. You can hope that the space is there whenever you need it and go to the landlord and negotiate it. And, you know, if the space is there, then great. Yeah, that can work really well. We always try to negotiate for an actual option in the lease. So there's something called an expansion option, which basically says, hey, landlord, you have to deliver X amount of square footage to us on this date. Period.
Is that called expansion or must take?
Well, that's an expansion. It's an option because we have the option to ask you to provide that to us on a particular date for a particular square footage. Landlords, of course, hate that because it kind of strands that amount of space and they can't really do much with it in the meantime.
Right.
Unless it's, you know, years down the line and it's already built out. The must take that you just mentioned, however, is kind of a variation on that. Instead of it being an option of the tenant, it's an agreed amount. So you lease 10,000 square feet today, and in 6 months, 12 months, whatever the number of months is, then you automatically have additional space delivered to you. And there is an advantage to that in that the full 10,000 square feet and the expansion space, let's call that another 2,500 square feet, all of that can be built out at the same time. And so you are not going to have to live with construction while you're in occupancy. So that is a big benefit to the must take. But again, you better be really, really sure that you're going to need that space on that date. The one that's the most common is what's called the right of first offer. And so the right of first offer basically says, hey, when the space becomes available, we're going to offer it to you first.
The space next to theirs or somewhere in the building.
Wherever it happens to be. So, you know, you occupy all of the second floor and you want an option on, you know, half the third floor. So when that half of the third floor comes available, then it comes to you, that the landlord comes to you and says, all right, let's negotiate. There's not necessarily agreement on what the terms of that are going to be, although you could agree on what, hey, it's going to be on the same terms as what we have on our primary lease. But like when you start talking about tenant improvements, well, all right, now you only have, let's say, 2 or 3 years left on your lease. Well, you're not going to get the same amount of improvement allowance that you did on a 5-year lease on the beginning. So the right of first opportunity is triggered by the availability of the space. Let's say your next door neighbor is going to move out and, you know, you want the first shot at that. That's an example of when it then becomes available. If it's going to be triggered by a third party, meaning the landlord has reached a deal with a third party, some other tenant who wants the space next door, now they have to come offer it to you first. That's called a right of first refusal. They're giving you the right to refuse to lease the space. Now, what are the terms of that? Well, it could be what we call a matching terms right of first refusal, where whatever the terms are that they negotiated with that other tenant is being offered to you. Well, that may not be all that good, because what if they negotiated for 5,000 square feet, you only need the 2,500. They negotiated for a 5-year deal and you only have 2 left on your lease. You want it to be coterminous. So there's all these other kinds of issues that can come up that may not be ideal, but a lot of times in those situations, you're going to negotiate something that applies to not just the expansion space, but also to the original space at the same time.
Okay, the third option would be buy a membership in a co-working space that offers extreme flexibility, but you pay for it.
Well, it does.
The most expensive option.
And in fact, we have a client right now that has, I think, 13 people in a co-working place, which is a lot, because they could certainly save money by going out and getting their own dedicated space. That's
maybe not save money long term, because he's got rapid growth in his future.
Well, and that's a good point. I mean, flexibility comes at a cost.
He's paying for it today to not have to pay for it tomorrow.
Right, because if he goes out and leases the 5,000 square feet he needs now, and then he needs 8,000 feet in another year or 18 months, and the landlord doesn't have it, well, now what do we do? Mm-hmm. So, but I'm getting ahead of myself, because that's the next one. So buying a membership in a co-working space could be really good. And I say co-working, it could also be like executive suites, like a Regis like that. So any what they call serviced office, at least that's what the Brits call it.
Okay. The fourth one is buy your own dang building and sublease out what's not needed. Non-renew tenants when you need the space. Kick them out.
Yeah, and actually, if you own your own building, you would actually be leasing out the extra space, not subleasing it out. But
depending on how it's listed, that's right.
Okay.
Because sometimes, very rarely, the tenant and the building owner could be the same company. Usually, we recommend you change names.
Okay.
But anyway.
Good. Thank you for clarifying and schooling me. So that was good. But yeah, I mean,
Bob 0, Jan 1.
We're recording this during the Olympics, if you couldn't tell. So if you buy a building and lease out or sublease out, whatever it is, the extra space, or maybe there's already tenants in place, and as their leases expire, you grow into their space. That could be a good opportunity for flexibility. You know, the one thing that is interesting is that a lot of people think that buying a building, you know, that they're stuck with the building. Whereas in a lease, oh, well, my lease will expire, I can get out of it. I actually kind of think the opposite is true. The lease is a fixed expense for whatever that term is. You do a 10-year deal, and let's say you outgrow it after 3 years. Now you got 7 years of a lease that you're obligated to. And yeah, you can try to go to the landlord and see if they'll negotiate a buyout, but that rarely happens. And you can also try to sublease the space, but usually that's at a much lower rental rate than what you're paying. So it's kind of an expensive option. Well, if you own the building, however, you can sell it anytime you want. And so I personally think that if you're really focused on flexibility and you're avoiding buying a building because of that, because your growth is going to be big, I'm telling you, I think that actually may be something you ought to consider, assuming that you want to use your capital in that way. You know, there's a lot of other issues that come up with that. But
well, and Miata has a handy-dandy tool for comparing a lease versus the purchase of a building, which shows you down to the square foot price,
right,
which way is the way to go.
Yep.
Our fifth option, secure a very short-term lease. Again, probably being one of your most expensive options.
Yeah, and we actually did a lot of this during COVID. Everybody was so unsure of what was going to be the future.
Gunshine.
So we did a lot of one-year extensions, 18-month extensions. And so we were doing a lot of things that were much shorter term than what we normally would have. I mean, the ultimate flexibility, of course, would be month to month. But as we pointed out in earlier, that's really a co-working space. You can't go to a building and do a direct deal for whatever amount of square footage and tell the landlord, hey, it needs to be a month-to-month deal. They'd laugh you out of the place. But at the same time, it's not good for a tenant either, because as long as it's only the tenant's option to do a month-to-month and basically terminate at any time with 30 days notice, sure, that'd be great. But what if the landlord had that option too?
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, you're in the middle of a big deal and they come to you and say, hey, we're going to take that space back. You know, that's not good. So flexibility is only ever good for you, whichever party you are, mm-hmm, the landlord or the tenant. You don't want to give anybody else that. So a short-term lease is good for like project-based opportunities where, you know, there's a company that has a specific project they're doing and they know there's a limited life to it. That would make a lot of sense. Or, you know, COVID, that's certainly going to be a time when that makes sense. But in most cases, it makes no sense for you to move into a building, spend the money, mm-hmm, for the move, the disruption to your business, everything else, and the improvements, and then, you know, sign a one-year deal.
Okay, our sixth and last option is the hub and spoke model, where the hub is an office, but spokes are employees working from home or co-working.
And we did a whole episode on this several months ago, where one of the landlords here in town called Granite Properties, mm-hmm, partnered with one of the co-working operators called The Common Desk, and they created this hub and spoke model. So you can have your headquarters in one of the Granite buildings, and let's say you put in 5,000 square feet there, and that's really mainly for meetings with employees, meetings with clients, that kind of thing, and, you know, collaboration. And then everybody does their real work from home or from a co-working. And because Common Desk has, I think, about a dozen locations in DFW now, it really gives people flexibility. And if they only have to go into the office occasionally for those meetings, they can then live further out into cheaper housing or a particular neighborhood that they always wanted to live in where, yeah, it was just a little too far from the office. So it gives people some, not only the company flexibility, but it now gives the employees flexibility as well. So it's kind of a win-win.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Confessions of a Recovering Landlord podcast. At Riata Commercial Realty, we exclusively serve companies that lease or purchase office and warehouse space. We never represent landlords. Find us at texastenantrep.com or give us a call at 972-677-0028.
Hey, and we'd appreciate a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It'll help other people find us. Bye.
Bye.